You are listening to Radio Free Signs of the Times, broadcasting into the heart of an occupied America.
Welcome to this week's Signs of the Times podcast. With us this week is French astrophysicist Jean-Pierre Petit.
Hello.
Welcome. Jean-Pierre is not only an astrophysicist, he's an artist, he's a musician. He has been working on a series of comic books explaining science in very clear terms for close to 30 years. The comic books are available for free on his website, and we'll give you that address later. Jean-Pierre has had a life that's quite unusual. He learned to fly when you were, 10 or 12? 12 years old, he learned to fly. In his late teens, he was doing scuba diving off the coasts of Marseille at a time when scuba diving was not the tourist sport that it is today. In the early 60s, he was invited to spend a year in Princeton, and he managed to get himself thrown out after one day because he took his lunch break to start investigating the top secret
places he shouldn't have been investigating.
And maybe he'll tell us a bit about that later. He was for many years a researcher in the CNRS, which is a French network of research centers. And he was one of the most advanced scientists in the area of magnetohydrodynamics back in the late 60s and early 70s until he got involved in letters from extraterrestrials called the Umites. And the scientific establishment wasn't quite ready for this. And he spent the rest of his career marginalized, we could say. And we'll probably learn a bit more about this. So welcome, Jean-Pierre.
Hello, hello.
Let's begin by talking about your work in magnetohydrodynamics.
Well, I think probably the listener doesn't know exactly what is magnetohydrynamics. Mm-hmm. It's not very well known, you know. It has been invented by the British in the 17th century. And it's how to accelerate a fluid which is a good electrical conductor with a magnetic cross-magnetic field and electric field. It's very well known anyway. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, if any of our listeners have seen the movie The Hunt for Red October, the magnetohydrodynamic propulsion was, they called it the Caterpillar Drive. It was the silent propulsion system. So those of you who've seen that movie, you know, there you go.
But it was not said clearly, you know. But in fact, we know that about the movie Red October, the purpose was MHD propeller. And MHD propeller is classical, it's not fiction, you know, it's not fancy. You could find that in books 40 years ago. It was invented by Michael Faraday. And then you have two sides. The first side is to accelerate fluid, but the second is to produce energy, electrical energy from a fluid moving. And Michael Faraday tried to demonstrate that to the king. He used a magnetic field, which was the magnetic field of the earth, and he used electrodes. And as a fluid, he used the Thames River. When you have a tidal effect with North Sea, so you have a very small signal, electrical signals, and he put electrodes on the two extremity of the river, and he could demonstrate, he could produce some electricity, but the king was not very convinced that it could be useful for technological applications. So that was the end of the story. But you realize how old is it? So at the end of the 50, people began to be interested in magnetohydrodynamics in many countries, and especially in Russia. But we knew that later, much later. For an example, the head of the magnetodynamics in Russia was Andrei Sakharov. Andrei Sakharov in 1954 built a pulsed MHD generator which was able to produce 100,000 amperes. Mm-hmm. And an incredible amount of gauze. It was a genius in this field. But this was completely classified. As a conclusion, we'll see that later. MHD has been intensively developed in the United States, but it is a top secret field. Mm-hmm.
So that there are no, at the minute, even today, there are no kind of public applications of this?
Well, you know, what you can, public application, many things were developed in the 60s because there was money for research. Mm-hmm. And then the MHD generators have a special feature. They have a very good efficiency. Classically, you use a turbine, gas turbine, steam engine turbine, yes, and the efficiency is close to 40%. But with MHD, we could rise the efficiency to 60%. So for the same amount of petrol, for the same amount of thermal energy, you could produce much more electricity. So, you know, the money, the gold in money was very high. Mm-hmm. And then in all countries, United States, England, Germany, France, Italy, Japan, many teams were building huge machines. And I started to be involved in this work in 1964. And then a young researcher whose name is Velikov, who became the head of the Academy of Science in Russia. I think he's still there. Mm-hmm. But in 1964, he was young. He predicted an instability, whose name is Velikov instability. It's some of turbulency of mm-hmm. the plasma, and it cancelled completely the efficiency of the process. And when people tried to build this machine, they encountered this Velikov instability, and they fought during some 5 years, and then they gave up. English gave up, French gave up. But I was the only one to succeed to canceling Velikov instability. But, you know, in France, I was a young researcher. I presented this work in 1967 in Warsaw in an international meeting. So I was immediately known by all researchers in the United States and in Russia, but not in France, you know. In France, mm-hmm. they didn't understand a word of this work, what was used for. So they decided to stop research. Well, so you were asking about civil application. Mm-hmm. Civil application was to produce electricity. Mm-hmm. And now I think we should speak about that because it's a very recent discovery. Perhaps you know that in France, people are building with other country ITER. ITER is a tokamak.
Yes.
It's supposed to be a machine to produce fusion, so to deliver energy, and the energy would be converted in a vapor, and this vapor sent to a turbine in order to produce electricity. And this research is very problematic because since 50 years, they didn't succeed so much. The only success was obtained in England, and they made in Culham tokamak that worked during 1 second. And now we are planning to spend an incredible amount of money to build a much larger tokamak that would work 10 seconds, and then, and so on, you know.
We should say for our listeners that there was a big international debate over where this reactor was going to be built, and the choices came down to either Japan or to France. Mm. And at the end of the day, France was chosen. And so behind it, there's a certain amount of pride and national fervor because the French won it from the Japanese,
You know, to tell the truth, you know, you have something like 1,000 or 2,000 researchers, and they wanted the tokamak be installed in France because this is a paradise. You know, this place where this machine will be built is a paradise. It's close to Paris. It's close to Saint-Tropez. It's close to everywhere. You know, they are in the center of Europe. They have a quality of life completely fantastic. Nobody will ask anything to them, and they will spend 20 years holidays there, you know, and have money to travel. That's the truth, you know. And therefore, you know, it's 1,000 people that decided that it would be a good place to spend holidays. And I can swear you something, you know, if ITER would have been installed in Iceland, they would not be so enthusiastic. You know? Well, what I would like to say is that in 1976, I was in the States and I visited Sandia Laboratory near Albuquerque, New Mexico. Well, as you will see, this is connected to your mid-story, because at this time we received a letter, and the letter was warning us that directed energy weapons were to be built in this laboratory, and nobody knew that over all the world. The world was unknown what was directed energy weapon beams. Well, so two targets laboratory were mentioned. One was Livermore, and the other was Sandia. Well, perhaps it's amazing, it's funny to tell how I was the first European to see the big laser in Livermore, because
Livermore is in
California. And in Livermore, the man who was in charge with this big laser was Alstrom. Alstrom was a Swedish man, and he discovered at the middle of the 60s that if you want to make a big power output with lasers, it's better to use solid lasers like glass plus neodyme instead of gas lasers. Mm-hmm. But he was a little afraid his invention could be caught by his colleagues, so he decided to go to France, and he said, I will be in condition to develop that. And that was my laboratory. I was a young researcher. And when Alstrom came, I said, oh, my poor man, I will warn you, you know, you are going to escape from interstate because you're scared by your colleagues, but here my boss is worse. So he was grounded, and he organized this research in France, and he made gas lasers and glass lasers, but he hid the second research. And when he went back to instead, I remember my boss, he was saying, Alstrom, c'est un bandit! Alstrom is a bandit. So Alstrom escaped the French. And when I went to meet him in Livermore 10 or 15 years later, he told me, I will thank you, and I will give you the possibility to visit the 1 terawatt lasers. So I was the only one to see these lasers in this time. And when I went back to France, I was sent there by a journal whose name is Science et Vie, and I wrote a paper, and I had picture, color picture, showing the 1 terawatt laser, but they did not believe it. the paper was not published because they asked it to specialists in France, and they said, you know, 1-2 megawatt laser, but 1 million megawatts, impossible.
What do you thought with your own eyes?
You know, I have nothing to answer, you know.
Yeah.
Let's be back to this discovery. The second laboratory was Sandia. In Sandia, they tried to achieve fusion with electron beams. And these two laboratories were very close to military, of course.
Oh. Well,
so in Sandia, I met Gerald Yonas. And Gerald Yonas is still the head of this laboratory in Sandia. And the installation, the plant was huge. You know, they were directing electron beams on a bird's egg in order to have fusion. And recently, and you can find that in the web, Jonas had a very brilliant idea. He has built something like a bird cage. This bird cage is 2 inch high and 1 inch diameter, and it's made of very thin wires. Mm-hmm. And he inject in these wires 20 million amperes. Mm-hmm. He's a specialist of high currents, you know. So 20 million amperes, and if you know a little bit about physics, you will know that this cage will be crushed on itself. Mm-hmm. And the temperature will grow very fast. And inside the cage, you have a sort of foam, which is a secret. And at the center of the system, you have the target. And listen to this number. They have achieved 2 billion degrees last week, and they made the experiments many times. You don't realize what is does it mean.
In a give a comparison, the tokamak that they're planning on building, what temperatures can they get out of that?
20 times less. 100 million degrees. Here it's 2 billion degrees. Mm-hmm. So is it 20 times more?
So with this bird cage with a type device that they can achieve 20 billion degrees, this is in the laboratory in
Sandia.
In Albuquerque.
Of course, the cage is transformed into a plasma immediately.
But Jean-Pierre, is this public?
Yes.
Knowledge?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I think we had an article on the page about it. And you can, I mean, there were articles in, like, you know, like New Scientist, like various, like, you know, Discover magazine, like, you know, various magazines where they kind of report a little bit on it and they explained, you know, kind of how it worked and everything. So it's you know, public knowledge.
We're kind of conspiratorially minded here.
Mm. Yeah.
So, and generally.
No.
Yes. Sometimes. And generally, we think that when such technology or science is publicly released, that this is not the first time.
Probably. I agree with you. But now, perhaps it's the time to tell to people. Mm-hmm. And it goes with the last declaration of Bush, who said, we have new system to produce energy. Mm-hmm. Remember? And people were thinking about classical nuclear plants. Mm-hmm. But this is completely different. I will explain why, you know.
As you said, this is a clean form of nuclear
energy.
Well, exactly. In a way, this might relate to Bush and the Iraq war and the allegations of war for oil, because there's recently, over the past several months, there's been more and more noise or
pressure
from within
and under pressure from
elsewhere within the Bush administration, and a lot of the neocon people are talking about this need to get away from their dependency on Middle East oil and traditional kind of fossil fuels.
Exactly.
And at the same time, then this that you're describing, this
but this discovery is really a breakthrough. Mm-hmm. And I explain why, you know, because when you want to achieve fusion, the lower temperatures, 100 million degree, and you use every hydrogen, you need to make sure of deuterium and tritium. Tritium is a problematic material, you know, a radioactive material. And you use it, and you produce one atom of helium and a neutron. And the neutron, you can't capture it, you know. So the neutron cannot be stopped by the magnetic field, and it makes the system to be radioactive. But if you can achieve 1 billion degree, you can use mixture like lithium hydrogen or like boron hydrogen, and this produce 2 alpha ray, I mean 2 nuclei of helium, and the second produce 3 nuclei of helium and no neutrons. So it's a clean fission. Mm-hmm. And imagine a nuclear plant, and you ask the question, what are you doing with the remnant materials? Oh, make balloon with for the children.
Make
balloons for the children, because it produces helium, just helium.
Uh-huh. This is the application.
No, but you know,
We would like if that was the application.
You know, I would say that tokamak and ITER, it is a steam engine because you have huge machine that works in steady states, and then you produced steam, hot steam, and then you put that in a turbine and you produce electricity. In the machine like Sandia, the plasma expands in a magnetic field, and this becomes an energy converter, and it produces electricity directly.
And you were saying when we were talking before the podcast that you could have one of these things in your garage.
Not exactly in your garage, but you know.
No. But it's not the large installations of the nuclear reactors that we'd see.
No. It, you know, it's the beginning of something, because even I think they can achieve higher temperature. And they were surprised of this temperature because the goal of Jonas was to produce X-ray in order to trigger atomic bomb. You know, it was not civilian research anyway. You know that if you want to initiate a fusion bomb, like H-bomb, it's not bomb with hydrogen. It's a bomb with lithium and hydrogen. It's a solid fuel. Mm-hmm. But if you want to light this solid fuel, you need atomic bomb, a small one. But you know that you cannot minimize the power of a bomb. So Jonas was asked, could you produce enough X-ray to initiate the reaction? But it did not think it could have 2 billion degrees. So you have civilian application that go much further than military application.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, when we look at energy sources, there's a close relationship with the military all along. And as you were talking earlier about your work in the magnetohydrodynamics, and I think it was the mid-70s when these things stopped. The projects, the public projects were stopped, and it was moved to
at the end of the 60s.
At the end of the 60s.
At the end of the 60s, yeah.
Because it's interesting that it was in 1973 that we had the oil crisis, and there seems to be a relationship between people becoming aware of some sort of energy crisis, and it's at the same time these other sources of energy go from being public to being put into secret programs that nobody knows about.
But the secrecy was kept during many, many years. I discovered all that during the winter 2000 to 2001 in Brighton, in England, you know. And everything was given up. The Russian had given up officially. The French had given up completely. The British had given up. The Italian had given up. All country, Polish, and so on. And when I went to MHD meeting in the United States, you had people in the civilian side, and they were very sad. I said, it's a pity we have given up all this MHD. It should be interesting. At the same time, you couldn't imagine in the Area 51 what was going on with the military. And this, I can tell you the story. Well, so during this winter, and I wrote a book about it, I went to a meeting in Brighton, a small university. We were something like 40 persons, and the subject was advanced propulsion. Advanced propulsion means anything. Well, and when I was there, a man went, an American, and he said, "You are Professor Petit?" "Yes, I'm Professor Petit." "Why?" "Because the first time I read your paper on MHD was in 1975. 1975, yes, about MHD converter and MHD aerodyne. And I spoke with him, and after half an hour, I said, "Well, you know a bit about all this stuff. What are you doing?" And he said, "Ah, I was just in charge of the American MHD torpedo." MHD torpedo? And so, if you have the curiosity to look at my comic book, you will find all the principle of this torpedo in the book.
And is that book translated in English?
Yes.
What's the title of it?
It's A Silent Barrier. Silent Barrier. And there is also another anecdote about this. I had an old good friend whose name is Oppenheim. Oppenheim was in charge of a big fluid dynamics laboratory in Berkeley. And he invited me 10 years ago to give a lecture in Berkeley. And I gave a lecture of about MHD. And I presented my books, my comic books. And in the room was a man, 70 years old, whose name was Kunkel. Kunkel was in charge of the plasma physics laboratory of Berkeley. And you know, this is not a small laboratory because this is a place where was evanescent the first antimatter. The first antimatter particle were created in Berkeley. Well, it's already famous. And Oppenheim said to Kunkel, you're very lazy. What happens? I never saw you in a seminar like that. And Kunkel said, I can't be silent because since 1 hour I hear this French and he's talking about things that are very secret in the States. And we are working on it in Livermore. And so secret that I cannot tell what is it about. And I found it in his comic book. Yeah. I swear that's the truth, you know. So we had a certain amount of smoke at this time. So we knew that in Livermore they were working the hell about it. Well, but the confirmation was given by this man in Brighton. And so we knew exactly, you will find the principle of this torpedo. Classical torpedo, you know, what is the velocity? 60 miles per hour with a classical propeller, mm-hmm. because you have a friction drag which is very strong. And the first solution was to push hot gas in the stagnation point of the torpedo in front, mm-hmm. and then you create vapor. And then this vapor surrounds the torpedo, and the torpedo can run in the vapor. And the friction,
so it's no longer moving through the water, it's moving through the vapor.
Exactly.
And this is using still using the traditional propeller.
No, this is using the...
No,
the
rocket
M-
propeller.
MH-
a rocket propeller. And it has been developed since 30 years, mm-hmm. both by American and Russian. Mm-hmm. The American name is Superkev, and the Russian name is Qual. And the French name is nothing because they don't have. And the British are just beginning to develop this, and they call it. This animal was a big horn on the nose.
Pinocchio.
No.
Rhinoceros.
Huh? Or well, something like that. Well, just think America and Russia. Mm-hmm. And perhaps China, because that's another problem, because China have a very high secrecy.
They don't tell you anything, yeah.
Yes, they have many things. Why I say that? Because in 1983, I went to a MHD meeting in the States, and two Chinese came. And that was the first time they participated to a MHD meeting. There was an old man who was in charge of a laboratory in Shanghai and a young one, 30 years old. And the old man presented pictures and showed what they did. And we realized that the Chinese had done exactly the same thing that the European and American and Russian. And besides me was a guy from Texas, and he said, gosh, we have satellite. We ignore that, but how could we know this? And I say, look, be quiet. Look at the picture. You know what looks like a big research center in China? It looks like an old factory with many bicycles. So with your satellite, you have to count the bicycle. When there are many bicycles, it's an interesting place. That's for we ignore the research, and mm-hmm. we continue to ignore research because we don't know what level they are. And if in 1983 they were very advanced in MHD, they have not stopped.
No.
And probably they have result two, and well, this is another mm-hmm. subject. Well, let's back to this torpedo, MHD torpedo. So I asked the American guy in Brighton, well, how fast do they train? say 200 miles per hour or much more. You know, with this voice, or much more. I said, what exactly? Yes, well, in 1980, we got 1,000 miles per hour from the beginning of the study. Wow. And now it goes faster. And what is use of such torpedo? You imagine the submarines, they follow each other all the time. And a submarine is the most dangerous weapon in the world because you cannot detect it, and it can launch its missiles. You can hide it under the ice and so on. Mm-hmm. Well, so if you want to attack a country, the first thing you have to do is to destroy its submarines. So you need fast torpedoes. And the torpedo is propellers, you know, it takes a quarter of an hour to get to get the target. And with the MSG torpedo, you have 3-5 second run. It goes very fast. So, and the Russians have the same torpedoes, too. The code name is a big one because they are large size. And this is another story, but they were tested on the Kursk.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
This yeah, so we could talk about the Kursk that was sunk. A few years ago off of the coast.
You're saying that the Kursk was hit with one of these torpedoes?
No.
Malfunctioned?
No, absolutely no. You know, it's another subject. We're going to talk it later because it's very large.
Yes.
You know?
Okay.
It's very large. We could talk about the Kursk. I will tell the truth anyway. So let's be back to Brighton. In Brighton, I was just aware that they had very fast torpedoes. I realized that in this meeting, there were a lot of men involved in black programs. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes in research, you have to behave like Sherlock Holmes. So I was looking all around, and I had my book, The Silent Buyer, with me. And I made copies, and these copies were given to a researcher. They were very glad to have it.
Comic books being given out at the scientific conference.
Yes.
I just want to interrupt here for a minute because you know you've mentioned your comic books several times, and so in these comic books, which are available on your website, you sort of reveal, you have very technical drawings of like how all these sort of secret technologies work. So why is it that you decided to actually, release all this information in the form of comic books?
Well, you know, I have nothing else to do. When you cut all your credits, when you have no money, you draw. Mm-hmm. You're just a piece of paper and a pencil, so I decided to draw and to make books, that's all. And you find many subjects in it. Well, so the question was, Where are the good guys? And one was a guy from Texas, I think. And he said, oh, I've seen your book. It's interesting. And I had an original book with me. And I said, I have a proposition to do to you. I give you the book, and you dine with me. You have a dinner with me alone. A distance from the meeting.
A small restaurant far away from the conference.
Exactly. And, you know, I cannot tell tomorrow because you will recognize him. But there were signs that he was involved in black programs. And we knew, and this black program was not a torpedo. It was what Americans know. It was Aurora. Aurora is a hypersonic vehicle. And this hypersonic vehicle is presented right now as a project. Mm-hmm. But it flies since 1980. 1980.
Because we should say for the listeners that the same principles that work in the magnetohydrodynamics in water and turning the water into vapor also work in the atmosphere.
Absolutely.
To increase the speed of planes.
Yeah, can you explain a little bit about how that applies?
Yes, you know, American and other country, and especially American, have spy planes. first were subsonic spy planes, the U-2, very slow. And then you discovered the Blackbird. The Blackbird was able to fly up to Mach 3 and to cross the Russian territory, and so fast that they couldn't destroy it. Okay. And then, you, where is the Blackbird? In the museum in Seattle.
Yeah. It's been around for a long time.
Yes. So it has been replaced by what? By balloons? By satellite? Just imagine.
Like B-52s.
Yes. So what is today's spy plane? An American presents Aurora like a project that will fly within 10 or 20 years, but that's not true. And the question that in Brighton we discovered how it works, because if you want to operate to fly an airplane up to Mach 12, you have a problem of heating due to the shockwave. You have, if you take ordinary turbofan, it works up to Mach 3, like Blackbird.
We should say Mach 3 is three times the speed of sound.
Which exactly. is 760 miles per hour.
Right. And then if you want to fly at a higher velocity, Mach 4, Mach 5, you get enormous problem because the compression eats the air, and nothing can stand that. And you can use that, we call a ramjet, but the goal is much further. It's Mach 12, how to achieve Mach 12.
And Mach 12 is about 10,000 miles per hour?
Well, something approximately. Like that. Yes. And we knew that the Russian had a similar project. The economy of Russia has been crushed, so they reveal their secret. Even they sell it because they are disgusted, because they had no money to build it. They had the same project, you know. American had the project of Aurora, as they had the money, the funding to make it, but the Russian had not. So Frechtag was in charge of the Aurora project. He gave some information about that, and we knew very fascinating thing about how it worked. The secrecy was in MHD, and you just said that with MHD you could accelerate gas, but you could also slow down this gas. And in Aurora and in his brother, Ajax, Ajax was the name of the Russian project. The question is to slow down the gas continuously before it enters the motor. And you recompress the gas, but you prevent to eat it too much, because if it's too warm, it will burn the motors. And so you use an MHD generator, wall MHD generator. That's fascinating because it's very brilliant idea, you know. So on this, perhaps you have seen the drawings showing Aurora, and you have been surprised by the square, the shape of the leading edge. Leading edge is cut. Many, and that's a good one. It's not sharp, it's cut.
It's flat.
And besides, they don't show that, you have electrodes. And the fluid is slowed down and then get inside the motor. And the electricity is used to reaccelerate the fluid at the exhaust. And we call it MHD bypass. So we guessed some things from the Russian information, and I had in front of me a man who was clearly involved in such project. So I used a French method to have information, which is beer. And when I opened the book, and if you look at this book, Silent Barrier, you look at the page 36. On this page 36, you have a magnetic design, which is not so strange. But when he saw the page 36, he said, "Oh, this is Ajax." And I said, "Also, yes, this is also Aurora, and you worked on
He was trying to say this is the Russians, but this is an American blaming the Russians.
Yes, part, so yeah. We had a dinner exactly like so in the West Town, you know. Mm. And I said, I would suggest a game, you know. We take a glass of beer. I will say something. If I'm right, you drink. If I'm wrong, I drink. Mm-hmm. But let's go, cowboy. He drank seven or eight glasses. And then I could have any information as possible.
Yeah.
And when he left me, you know, he couldn't stand. He said, and you know, this plane can be satellized by rockets. Good night.
This plane can be satellite by rockets?
Yes. Satellized. Giving an additional velocity.
Yeah, so it's like satellizable.
Satellizable. And you know something? This machine is more than a spy plane. It is a future launcher for satellite. Because consider the today technology for the rocket. You use a shuttle or you use a rocket, and you have to push. The weight, it takes an enormous amount of fuel to inject charge around the Earth. Mm-hmm. And you don't fly on the air. Mm-hmm. And if you could use some sort of airplane, you land on wheels, you accelerate up to Mach 3, and then besides the Aurora, you have ordinary motors. But they get close, and you change the inlet, and the inlet is on the top. And then you activate the MHD system, and you accelerate up to Mach 12, and then you use rockets, and then you get the satellization velocity.
Our conversation with French astrophysicist Jean-Pierre Petit on top-secret military programs will continue in our next podcast.
And if you'd like to read more about the topics we've discussed today, you can visit our website at www.signs-of-the-times.org. And if you'd like to visit Jean-Pierre's site, the URL is www.jp-petit.com.